With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hi, and I'm Virgie Rodriguez here with A Race of Your Own, where we talk about how inspiration leads to resilience. And these segments are those special segments that I have going on for my new kind of venture, which is Lavinia International, where we talk to folks all across the globe about their stories of resilience. And today's guest is not only an assistant artistic director, but also a paramedic. Born in Vancouver, British Columbia, he has collaborated and performed with artists such as Helena Fisher, Alanis Morissette, Rita Ora, and Kylie Minogue. He's also worked on shows like, X Factor and The Voice of Germany and Fashion Weeks in Milan and Berlin. Welcome to the show, Ryan Rhein is how you say it in German, but it's Ryan Rhein.
Ryan Rhein, Ryan Rhein, yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I have to say, it is good to see you again, Virgie, after a very long time.
A long time, because I think I saw you pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, absolutely.
When you got married.
I got married. Last time was in Vegas, like we just discussed.
Right.
And it's 2025. Here we are.
And here we are still looking the same, haven't aged.
Redefined.
One
reinvented.
Bit. Haven't aged.
One bit.
One bit. So, yes, and redefined, which is a big one. So going from entertainment to, I'm going to use the term healthcare industry.
Healthcare industry, correct.
I'm just going to use that as a just easy peasy. But going from entertainment into healthcare and being a paramedic, that those are two, talk about contrasting worlds, right?
And it's a question which you can imagine everybody in the pre-hospital healthcare division that I'm in now always wants to know, where did you come from? You know, you're not the youngest. It's a profession that is, people are either on their way out or they've reinvented, it's called here the Notfallsanitäter. It's like the paramedic. New laws came into effect 2014. We're entrusted with a lot more medical capabilities and procedures which we're allowed to, or which we're expected to provide to anybody in distress or in need or when threat of life is a very plausible outcome. You get 21 through 25 and like a big jump to plus 45, over 50, getting ready to retire. And then, you know, I show up. Man of color, foreigner. Where are you from? What did you do before? And of course, I was like, wow, oh my God. And you know, this and that, it's all very exciting. However, I do think, and this is really what I've gone inside to figure out, the individuals that we worked with before in all levels of entertainment, whether it be the star or management or the head designer or, you know, all of the people.
Drill. Yeah.
You're always a therapist, a mother, a friend. You're always helping somebody out of what for them at that particular moment could be the worst crisis they're going through in their life. And, you know, a dress showed up late or we're running behind schedule or God forbid more money has to be spent because this order didn't arrive. I compare that same type of approach, those people skills, with the actual clients that I have now, which are people who are actually in that moment feeling like, I'm going to die, or how am I going to survive this? I'm in excruciating pain. I don't understand what's going on with my body, whether it be, it's a flu. You have a flu, so you're going to feel weak. You should stay in bed. You're going to get up and be dizzy and fall down. All of these symptoms, it's like, I don't know how to deal with this. It's the same skill set. It's the same box I open up to deal with these people, at least on a one-to-one level. Mm-hmm. Dealing with these people, talking with them, gaining trust, finding a rapport, initial contact. The medicine, of course, comes later if you absolutely need to use it, but I don't find the difference. It's not such a big gap for me. When people look at it from the outside, it's like, it's have nothing to do with each other. It's the same. I'm there to make people feel better. Mm-hmm. In entertainment, it was for an hour or through a product or through our concept. Here, it's the medicine and it's me being here with you to hold your hand or to just be, give you company and support and understanding or an open ear. And then should I need to escalate, mm-hmm. you know, make you feel better.
Right. Right. And I mean, I feel like not a lot of people will look at it that way. Right. Because it's so like literally life. Like it's at that level.
It can be,
right.
Yeah,
or it can be at times. Right. That, you know, I have nothing but like an utmost respect, because to want to put yourself in that space, I can only imagine that there are probably days where it's like rough, right? Because you're seeing people either in a really shocked state or
vulnerable,
like really vulnerable, scared, or those moments where you're like, I literally just saved somebody's life.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are very accurate extremes. Fortunately, not on a daily basis, but you have to still be prepared for the unknown. It is that mystery. You get in the ambulance, you head off. Okay, I'm seeing what I'm reading on my pager, but once I walk through the door, what am I going to expect? So yeah, it can be intense for mm-hmm. sure, mm-hmm. for sure.
Are you usually on call? Is it like an on-call kind of thing?
That's all it is. So we are coordinated by the fire department. That's I'm in screening process or like a Q&A that they go through so that the caller can assess, is it an emergency? Do you need an ambulance? And if the right questions are answered, we're sent off. So it's always call. You don't just drive around and patrol. You are sent specifically to an emergency when it comes in. It could be you're picked up on the way back from the hospital, right? You've just dropped off a patient. You're writing your protocol, you're closing that call, mm-hmm. and you could get another one back to back. But, you know, you head back to the station and wait for the next call.
Do you feel like some of the things that you learned being an assistant artistic director, right? Meaning like, and I'm just going to say it, but like working with artists that are like huge, I'm not in particularly saying from anyone that I've mentioned, but like, you're literally dealing with these huge personalities, right? What's like one of the one things you could say that you've taken from that? Because it's, you know, you're doing, it's fun.
Absolutely.
Like it's so fun.
It's a job I loved. It was it was a calling.
Right.
It was my heart and soul. What I loved passionately. Mm-hmm. There were aspects that I had a colleague the other day asked me another question about, you know, this, that, or the other in entertainment. He's like, it's so interesting. Every time you talk about it, I see that do you miss it? Do you want to go back? No. I don't want to go back because, because I know that if I go back you never go back to where it was. But if I go back now, my biggest fear would be, it'll be fun for a minute, but then I'm going to be triggered by just those very few things that I couldn't tolerate anymore, that caused me stress, that really kept me awake at night, that I really just, and I hate the word hate, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but I hated those things. Mm-hmm. And if I went back, my biggest fear would be, you knew better, but now you've committed. And if there's one thing I am, I'm committed. If there's mm-hmm. one thing I am, it's loyal. If there's one thing I am, it is a hard worker. And I can only leave something when I can say to myself, there's nothing more that you can do. Mm-hmm. You have tried and exhausted everything for yourself, and you can turn and go in good grace. You're not letting anybody down, especially yourself. Move on. Mm-hmm. And I have very rarely, I could almost say I don't think I've ever gone back mm-hmm. to anything because of what's changed. And if it hasn't, you're stuck. I would be stuck because I would stay and I would tough it out and I would inevitably, supposedly,
Supposedly,
upset and trapped. That's, right. I'm sure, how I'd feel. So,
because you started out as a dancer, but you also started out as a gymnast.
Well, I came here a hot-headed, uncontrollable little 19-year-old.
Ugh. From Vancouver.
From Vancouver. Thought, this is going to be fun. And it was immensely entertaining. I had
the peanut gallery. Ugh.
Yeah. I had the UGH. Really the time of my life. Like, it was... It was the best decision of my life. Mm-hmm. I needed to go. And I think it... I want to say, regardless of where I landed, I think I would have been able to survive. I thank the universe I landed where I did, because it was fantastic. I always say my high school life was like Greece, and this time in Dusseldorf, comparable to like La La Land, it was just one giant fantastic roller coaster ride. On top of all of the shit that I didn't have together and all of the stuff that I wasn't able to do, it was still amazing. I was in a great space with great people who just welcomed me so openly and so honestly. You know, those times are tough to find nowadays, but back then it was alive and it existed and I thrived. But I came with my appearance. I can't do anything about that. That was by in part from gymnastics and I guess just a desire to not have to go home. Mm-hmm. I think the worst thing for me at that time, I left and some people were, you'll be back. You know, and it's like, no, I won't. Right. So that was all I had. That's how it started. And just one thing led to another. People connected me to modeling. Yeah. Modeling at the time was sort of a bit of, some shows were dance, some shows were just straight catwalk. Yeah, there was haute couture, there was commercial, there was photographic. And I get bored quite quick, I think, if I'm not really stimulated, and just the straight up modeling was like, and then I saw some dancers in a fashion show and I was like, oh yes, okay, how do you get involved with that? And that opened up the door to dancing, and then, you know, you just can't start dancing at that level. So then there was a significant amount of work that had to go into it. There was commitment and training, there was meeting the right people, there was people believing in me and helping me, guiding me, training me, preparing me. Don't get me wrong. Like, we're not talking, had not a great technique and stuff, but I was capable of staying in the lane that I was at, and I was prospering there. It was a big pop world, and pop world was just so open and so diverse. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty good fake it till I make it. I mean, let's be honest. You come over here at 19, you don't speak the language, you don't have, right. You're not legal, you're trying to figure, do I pay taxes, where do I earn money, how am I going to live? Yeah, they have a different word for everything. So you had to put on some mask that at least showed the people, well, I can do this if you give me the job, and then figure it out later. Just, I don't know, show me the steps and I'll go home and rehearse them and till I bleed, till I can get back in. At least not be the worst in the show. That's how it started.
Right.
The gymnastics was a huge benefit. It was such a door opener for me because I was a very rare breed. I was not as tall as all of the models, but I wasn't too short to not be on the catwalk. I was physically well-trained from gymnastics, and I had this massive acrobatic skill, which was different than just, I'm a dancer who can do a backflip. I was trained, and you threw a bar and I could do stuff on this bar. There were just a whole level of acrobatics that, at the time where I was, nobody was doing. Mm. Very few people were capable of doing. And if they were, they were gymnasts. They weren't trying to be models or in the entertainment industry. That helped a lot.
What I hear across from everything that you're saying, it's like with everything, with the, whether it was the dancing, the modeling, the gymnastics, all of those are like a discipline.
Yeah.
You need a certain level of discipline to be able to execute those at the level that you were doing it at, mm-hmm. right? And even, I'm sure that translated then over, because you definitely have to be a like disciplined assistant district artistic director, yeah. right? Like if yes. you're not yes. if you're not disciplined and you're not organized, you won't make it at all.
No. No.
Right?
No.
So now taking all of those things and pivoting into being a paramedic. Like, I could almost see that there is a through line.
There absolutely is. Patience.
Right.
Empathy. Understanding. A commitment to my choices, you know, and I'm not going to say you scale the commitment, but you are 100% committed. You can't walk into a situation in entertainment and do it half-assed. Right. Because I think the danger there is, first of all, there's the financial and your reputation. You mess those two up, it's very difficult to recover.
Right.
The second is people are always looking, as awful as this sounds, for some tiny little minute excuse to throw you under the bus, especially if they're threatened by your commitment and your passion to something. It's a rare breed that do something so honestly and so wholeheartedly that there's no jealous, there's no envy
right.
involved in the process. We were confronted with it.
Constantly.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Well, it's competitive.
But it's not even healthy. It's not healthy competition.
Right.
You know, it's
like we're so you, especially as a gymnast.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what competition
absolutely.
Is. But even as a dancer, competing for a job, you know, at an audition, it's kind of just like, you know, and I've talked about this before. It's like all our friends that are dancers that we used to audition against, you know, in the room. It's like, I need this gig.
I'm
getting this gig.
But you know what,
outside
Virgin, if
of the
you
room,
got the gig, I'd be like, girl, then you know
right?
what?
Like
your gig, well done.
Right. But outside of the room, it would just be like, oh my God, congratulations, you got it. I don't know if it's like we've built up a certain type of skin, right? When it comes to like that type of competition, because it's like now at this point, just like even just in my life, I'm just like, I don't care. Like I'm just like, oh, that's great. Like, I don't mind applauding for other people.
Absolutely.
I don't mind giving people their flowers in that sense. Right?
Absolutely. Like, it's not always about me.
No.
It doesn't have to be. And that was I was asked to be a part of this artistic creative
team
from a very special individual, School of Hard Knocks.
Right.
Like, it wasn't an easy transition. I was thrown in. It's not even to water over
they
my
They may
head.
Be in the room. Just maybe.
You might be just
they might
camera.
Be sitting right over there.
And you had to learn by doing, and don't, well, you have to also understand, I jumped on the bullet train. Like, this wasn't, you know, a little gig here and there. You have time to.
It was go.
Like, from your first job, we are doing a production that is costing millions of euros.
Well, Helena Fischer. Right.
Huge.
You guys were just talking about her before. She was what? Top well, something in the 100 Forbes.
She had attention from Forbes magazine. This is one of the highest grossing artists. I think she was at the time they had a list of, I think, 10 female artists. She was above J-Lo on this letter. And I think J-Lo and her were around 7-8.
Wow.
And at the top, there's only like Celine, Mariah, Whitney. So
right.
we're talking. Even if you don't know this individual's music, because it is a very specific music that belongs to a very specific area that is probably the size of a state in the United States. So 300 million people live in
How
the United States.
How big is a state?
How
small
big
state? California or Texas
even,
big?
Even take a take Texas, but that's how small right. the pool was. Or the fan base is that much smaller, yet the value, the outcome is on that level, right? So we're talking about
right.
achieving the same goals, the same revenue, the same sales, the same fan base, all of that with a fraction of the size of the audience in a much smaller genre of music. So that alone is a standalone thing. Like,
right.
you know what I mean?
The pressure, though, that comes with that, too, because when you get to that level, you have to keep producing at that level, right? Because mm-hmm. there's so many other people going, we need to get...
Well, true, but it's a young industry.
Right.
Marvin, my best friend and the person who gave me this opportunity, Marvin A. Smith, is the creator behind the concept Helena Fischer. She's an individual. She is a very talented individual. She is a very committed individual. She has the X factor. She's one of the hardest working artists, flat out, that I've ever seen, ever. That said, that is a fact. Yeah. The concept came from Marvin to take for this the equivalent to, it's called Schlager. It's the equivalent of like country. It's folk music here. and to apply the American concept of a superstar to that genre of music. So it was a very simple concept, but it was going to have to break down a lot of very well and long-term beliefs of how a female artist in this area should look. All of that had to go. And year after year and struggle after struggle and hard work after hard work, we're able to chisel away at that old mold and create a new one with her that took off like a rocket. I joined the bandwagon five, six years into the ride, where a lot of the really hard work was done, convincing the naysayers that this was going to work, even after success is rolling in, even after accolades are rolling in, even after fan bases are growing and units are selling and popularity is exploding, still trying to convince these people, because that's how strict and conservative this particular type of music was. So when I got on it, we were moving in the avenue of 15,000, 20,000 audience, which I'm making sound small because of where we ended up. So I got on at 15,000, 20,000 people, dance casts of 13 people that we cast in Los Angeles.
Like,
we were 13
dancers?
13, first ever done. 13 dancers auditioned and cast in Los Angeles. And after that, for the time that we were there, the next 6 years, we always cast the dancers from LA because we were trying to bring in an American form of entertainment, which we knew would work. Well, which Marva knew would work and which was immensely successful, and apply it to this, to this platform. And it was super successful.
Yeah.
So
13 is a bit.
13 is huge.
That's huge.
But it's
usually to, like 6, 8, maybe.
Well, but now you're getting a better idea of how big the shows were.
Yeah.
They weren't just get on the stage, play some music, sing. Like, there were concepts. It was up there with Pink and the Rolling Stones. Yes. Multiple stages had to be built.
Pink does have a big production. Yeah,
because it's always a concept. She's like, I can come and sing the song like you saw on the CD, or
I can fly through the air.
I can give you something you're not expecting, because we're charging you $1 million for the ticket. You may as well get your money's worth.
Right.
It's another problem I have with the industry, but we'll get into that later. So this was a massive, and I jumped in at that level. You know, and we were a small team because we didn't need to be a big team, and there were huge trust issues with trying to work with the teams that were in place and wanting to bring in the support and the value that we needed to keep this thing going. Because I don't want to say nobody because that sounds unfair, but 0.1% of talent that it takes to put together a concert, whether it be lights, stage, costume, anything.
Yeah.
It was difficult to find here to be at the level we needed it to be. We had those people. And then the next battle was convincing these old formats that these are the people that you need, because everybody wants to bring up their people. It's just that your people went as far as they could. They can't go any further.
Right.
It's done. It's
done.
Otherwise, we're going backwards, and you all want success and wealth and fame. You don't achieve that by going backwards. You have to reinvent. You have to reevaluate. You have to grow. You have to change.
Right.
So, but back to our original the original question is, dealing with all of that has given me a huge personal skill set to deal with yet now my new profession, people who are really in need. Like I said, whether it's a life-threatening illness or you're not feeling well and you just don't know what to do. I don't expect you to know what to do. You're not medically trained. And unfortunately, the world is not like it was when I grew up.
Mm.
You know, you fell down, you cut your knee, it bled. You were like, oh, I can deal with
that.
I need a Band-Aid. I'm good. Bet you didn't know better. But if you don't, that's not my job here. Right. My job is to deal with you right now, with your situation, the best that I can, to come to a solution that's going to make you feel better. And of course, I'm, you know,
doing your job.
Doing my job. So the entertainment industry definitely gave me a skill set to deal with these people that is invaluable.
Yeah.
Can't be taught.
No.
Can't be taught. And that is a huge weak point. I'm not sure if it's the same in the States and Canada. I haven't been there, but I do know that are part of the profession. It can be a bit rough. You know, if people don't see eye to eye, it gets a little personal, in my opinion. It can get a little uncomfortable. It's not how I like to work. It's not how I choose to work. It's not what I believe in. So
a certain level of empathy.
You have to have
it.
You can't, we are in the we are in the industry of care. It is literally the definition
of care.
Of care.
Caring.
Helping somebody.
Like, yeah. Caring.
Healthcare caring. Professional. Healthcare industry. You have to be able to care. And you have to be able to not judge. It's hard. You are a normal human being. You have good and bad days. Leaving. Ooh, girl. Being able to leave private shit at home and go to work and perform top level, also a skill set I learned in the industry. Throwing a look off to the left. Because
peanut gallery in the back.
As people of the entertainment industry, we have all the feelings.
Right.
All the time. And sometimes they're just, you can't get a grip on them. So Things can get ugly. Things can get rough. You're not always on your game. But you still have to show up and show face. And at the level we jumped into, those are a lot of faces looking at you, either going to act like you, thinking it's okay to act like you're acting, or look to you for guidance, for leadership. Mm-hmm. And if you fuck that up, difficult to get back. You know, like if you've think if you're standing at the top and all of these people are looking at you, if you mess up, every line below that thinks it's okay. You have to gather all of that and get it back to baseline. Harder than it looks for the short time that you're there, whether it's months or weeks or hours. That's I always lived in fear of that. If we lose it and lose the respect, how do you get it back? Mm. And do I have the energy to invest in the work I have to, plus this new thing I've now added to my list of problems?
Right.
Because that's what a production is. It's just problems until the curtain goes up. That's all it is. You just try to get stuff done.
People only knew.
Yeah.
Because it looks so beautiful, it's on stage and it's happening and it looks great. But up until that camera, that curtain goes up.
Yeah, or falls down. Yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
Stress. I'm so happy we got here. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's proper stress.
It is.
The whole time.
Because the show must go on. I mean, there's a reason people literally say that. Like, you know, it's. Now we're at 72,000 people in an arena.
That is football field, right? Is it football?
Soccer. I would equate it to a sports event because, of course, I think the arena itself is bigger, but we also play the field, right? So we are just the stage, right? So there's audience, there's, you know.
On the field.
Floor, there's B stage, there's satellite stage, whatever, and they go all the way up. So these are like O2 arenas.
So to go from 15,000 to 72,000, that just shows the growth of the artist.
Yes.
And the audience.
And the concept. That just shows the success of the concept.
And thank you to Marvin A. Smith for creating that world.
If you want to call it, you have an ego or you think so much of yourself, then yes, I do.
Right.
Because I can put my money where my mouth is. I can show you tangible. I can produce for you the success. So thank you. We're here.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we are here. Thank you.
And you found me. You found us. Stop making me fight so hard to do what you got me here to do. So again, now I'm dipping into some of the reasons that I just, you know, there's only so much of that I could take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's almost in any kind of in any field, so
absolutely,
to speak, like where it's like this proof of worth of right, whatever.
Ryan's threshold is really, you never can tell when he's stressed because he's ridiculously organized. You can never tell when he's stressed. So when he says I'm stressed, or when it's like, this is, you're stupid.
It's bothering. Yeah.
No, the second he says it, your average person has already literally been dead and ran over, you know, 20 times by a truck. But I'm going like, how? And he really, because like you said, and I hate to interrupt your podcast here, but
no, he doesn't.
But the thing about it is when he's working, he has no ego.
Yeah, it doesn't help you.
Ryan has no ego when he works, so he's there to work. And if you have him there for 15 hours, he's like, I want to work as hard as possible for 15 hours.
And if I'm lucky, I can get out of here in 12.
Right.
Right.
But that's then getting the people
on
board.
But you're already planning for 15.
Oh, absolutely. Right. One of my nicknames is the keeper of time.
Right.
Like, we need to get this done as quickly as possible, as safely as possible, and as accurately as possible. You know what I mean? And that's why all the professionals are around us. But just like a negative environment is intoxicating, so is a positive environment. And if you can win your team with that, then time really becomes irrelevant. Then everybody is there just to shine in their own little individual areas, because they know that if, you know, if content knocks it out of the park and lighting knocks it out of the park, when those two come together, it's like they're overjoyed. And then the dancers get on stage or costumes hit. Once it all starts to come together, you have this ubiquitous feeling of, look at what we've done.
Right.
Because it's not easy. And at this level, these people have been working their whole lives to do exactly what they're there to do. So when it comes together, it's truly amazing, which is then our feedback. That's what we get out of it.
Right.
You know, you walk around, and I remember one time we were looking down at this going, oh my God, look at this. Like, look at this. This is amazing. I'm glad we got this perspective, because normally we don't enjoy it. It's like, curtain up, everybody's okay. Bye, Felicia. Like, I need to sleep, or I need to get out of here, or I just, you know, it's like, we've done all we can do.
Yeah, like, it's in your hands. You want me backstage? No, I want to go home.
No, I don't need to be here anymore.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a more of that negative seeping in.
Yeah.
And in all actuality, you probably have to already be at the next location getting ready to do whatever the next thing is.
Yeah.
If it's not this show, it's going to be something else.
Right.
But to sit back and look at the and just hear the audience, so that is in itself a huge reward. It's intoxicating, you know. Maybe it is ego. Maybe that is my ego going, oh my God, you with this team, you guys did this. Mm-hmm. I remember when this was an idea sketched on paper, and look at it. Self-fulfilling prophecy, whatever.
Making things kind of come to life in that sense.
Yeah, but that was the feel-good feeling, you know. And then, you know, the journey to get there, I want to say it wasn't so bad, but, you know.
Right.
Each year, it got a little harder to just, you know, have that be the thing that was like, okay, I'm ready for the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, I can just hear you say basically kind of this full circle. You kept having, like, you know, reinvent, do this thing, put it out into the world, manifest it off of paper, make it happen, have an audience, give you the reaction, move on to the next thing, right?
Yeah.
And so having that structure, but again, discipline, that's just kind of what it sounds like to me.
I am very disciplined. I'm Capricorn. So I think that I like to be very specific. Mm-hmm. I don't like gray zones. I'm open to options. That's different than gray zones. I don't like wishy-washy answers. Mm-hmm. I don't like having to compensate for people who wanted to be there, who've convinced us they should be there. And then once they're there, I'm not getting from you what it is you showed me to get this job. I just feel like you've lied to me. You know what I mean? Because I'm ready to go above and beyond the call of duty, because that's my job. That's my, right. That's exactly what I'm here to do. But if I'm having to pick up your slack, I have a lot of patience for that, but I have literally zero understanding.
Work ethic.
Absolutely.
And work ethic.
I have to be careful how I dose that out. I have like Marvin said, I am patient. Not to a flaw, but I'm patient because I know that at the end of the day, we need a solution to whatever the issue is. And I have to keep this thing going with the production team. Like, I'm not responsible for the whole production, but on the creative element of it, exactly. That is what I'm here to do.
Right.
So I don't really have... I probably had more tolerance in the beginning as I was trying to feel my way around and learn these people and the communication form, the words to use, who I need to speak to, what is my authority. It was all a learning process. Like I said, it was the bullet train. You got on and you just held on for dear life and, you know, sink or swim. Cute analogy. Super fast train. Now I'm in water. Anyways. it was shock therapy for sure. Mm-hmm. I knew I could be good, but there's tons of mistakes in the beginning, you know. A lot of them were trust. I trusted in the wrong people, which was a very hard lesson. You know, being betrayed by those that you thought were on your team, very difficult to recover from, especially if you're very you have a lot of empathy and you know your heart is in this situation. But you know, what doesn't kill you makes you harder, makes you stronger. Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not sure if that's always a good thing, but for me, definitely it was a learning curve. Absolutely.
And so some of the stuff I talk about here, we talk about here, is, and I ask everybody always the same question is, you know, what advice would you give someone to stay in a race of their own, right? In life, you're going to go through mountains, up, down, you plateau sometimes. And sometimes there's just moments where there's just tumbleweeds and you don't know which way to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, coming from an entertainment background, moving into being a paramedic, you know, still having kind of like that access, so to speak, into the artistic directing world or just in entertainment as a whole, what advice would you give someone to stay in a race of their own?
Well, advice I think I've learned for me is a bit tricky. I can tell you what worked for me.
Yeah.
And what I believe was the big asset for me. You know, you're a foreigner. Like all of these things were, when I tell people about it, like I just don't know how. Just, you have to believe in yourself. And you really have to believe that you can do it. I get depressed. I'm moody. You know, not every day is a good day. But I do know in my core that I am capable of doing what it is I put my mind to. Mm-hmm. The timeline is probably what I'm not prepared for. Do I want to do this in 5 minutes? And I really actually think it's going to take 4 or 5 years. Okay, I probably haven't come to terms with that. But I do believe that I can do it. And if you really believe that, you'll figure it out. It's just put one foot in front of the other. You mm-hmm. just have to make the next step. And then the next step will usually present itself. That got me through everything because there were way too many obstacles that I didn't even have on my radar when I left Vancouver. And here I am.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things were...
On an international podcast.
On an international podcast in a foreign country, in English... Speaking about two career choices that I've made in my 53 years on this planet.
That part.
As a black, gay individual.
That part.
I always tell people, oh, and how do you deal with this? I'm like, listen, all the stuff that I am all of the social unaccepted norms. Right. It doesn't matter where I go. Somebody's not going to like something about the lifestyle that I've chosen.
Right.
For sure. So I guess just nothing bothers me anymore. I'm not concerned about, I love my fellow man and I really want to be a good person, but I'm not concerned about all of the rest of the bullshit. It's just like, okay, well, if that's...
Sometimes you just got to kind of turn it off, walk away and just be like, do you, boo?
Exactly. This is just, it's not about me.
It's not.
It's not about me.
Because it's a distraction. It's all a distraction because you're walking in your purpose. And once it becomes so clear of what that is for you or your family or your friend before you, once it becomes so clear on what you came here to do, nothing else matters.
It doesn't.
It does not matter what anybody else thinks, feels, what it doesn't, because that's just not your purpose. That's not your walk.
It's not. And you have to go to bed at night with yourself. And if you move, you are taking you. Mm-hmm. And whatever the situation is, whatever the confrontation is, it's still you that has to deal with it. When we part ways, you may never see that individual again, ever. And if you do, 9 times out of 10, if they remember who you are, they won't remember what it was.
Right.
So why am I supposed to go home and in my head start rolling around and doubting myself and letting that creep into all of the things that I know I'm capable of doing? Easier said than done, by all means. I'm in no way perfect. I'm new at being a paramedic. There are huge challenges that I have been confronted with that I'm no stranger to trauma, but these were, I really had to stop and think. I was like, are you going to be able to recover from this? I lost a patient.
Mm.
I lost a young,
so sorry,
viable man in his 30s. We did nothing wrong.
Mm.
We did nothing wrong, but this person died, and it was not a typical situation where I was confronted with an individual who was already had injuries non-compatible with life, is how we determine it here. Like, the potential outcome for this person could be death. This person presented as non-critical. You know, we have to assess the situation. We do what we can, and we present options. Do you need to go to the hospital? Has anything I've seen here given me any reason to think that further care in the hospital environment is something that you need? And when it's unclear, there are no signs for me. The guidelines are very specific. And this patient presented as non-critical. So 3 hours later, I'm called back to the same individual and he's died. His wife is trying to resuscitate him on the floor and he passed away. And I'm haunted with the thought of, what did I miss? Am I responsible? Did this family with a new baby in a new environment, have they just been ripped apart because of a mistake that I made? Mm-hmm. And that is terrifying. That's a trauma. If you can't, that's a hard recovery. If you don't have the skills and the community and the support, there are people that don't recover from that.
Yeah. But knowing that you got trained and you took in everything that, and you know that you crossed your T's. And that's why I kept going back to your artistic directing, because I'm like, that's like a training that not a lot of people get.
It was. And early on, I've been a licensed paramedic since October last year. I'm young.
In this world.
In this job, after all the schooling, I'm confronted with the reality of, you know, everything in training is not the reality. It's a baseline. Yeah. It gives you a direction to work from so that you make very few, if no mistakes. You have a guideline to follow, but every human is individual.
Right.
Just because you present one way doesn't mean somebody with the exact same symptom is going to present the same and is even going to be affected, that the outcome is going to be the same.
Right.
So this haunted me for a while. I was having doubts. I thought, do I have to leave this? Am I going to be able to see this through? Do I have the strength to go back? Because even if I, you know, they're like, take some time off. I'm like, I don't think I could do that. I have some days off. Let me just stay on schedule because I don't want to go home and be haunted by this and then see the ambulance and get another call and be like, I can't do this. I don't want to build in my own trauma. Just to come back to, you have to know and believe in yourself, I can do this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. There's going to be trials and tribulations. It's not always going to be comfortable, but that's okay because I will be able to do this. I will get better. And I will have learned from this and I can keep going. Mm-hmm. No fear. A healthy respect, but not in fear.
Definitely.
So that's got me this far. I don't think you need a lot. 3,000 tips, just 3,000 things you have to remember.
Right.
Just believe that you can do it. And I am 100% confident that you can.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for being here. Really love the feedback. I love it so much. This big pivot that you've made, but I love it. You know what I mean? I think it's great. So I'm Virgie Rodriguez. Thank you so much for tuning into A Race of Your Own. Leave our comments, subscribe, ask questions. Let us know what else you want
to
know. Please. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye.